Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, writer, director, actor, Tim Robbins, has always been known for putting his money where his mouth is. Now, of course, we know him for movies such as Bull Durham, his Oscar-winning turn in Mystic River. But for many years now, he's been keeping alive with a very intrepid group of actors, a repertory company here in L.A., The Actors Gang. Their newest production is a terrific head-turning staging of The Rivals, one of the greatest farces certainly of, I guess it's the 18th century, wasn't it? Tim, first of all, thanks so much for coming back.
Well, my pleasure. Yeah. It's George Washington's favorite play.
Well, that tells you everything you need to know about it. But as we were talking about before we got going, my memory just from in school is that it was roundly attacked just for the Falkland character. I mean, the lead character in the play, because obviously, it's, to your mind, he was probably really misunderstood, that character, wasn't he?
A lot of the characters are misunderstood, and a lot of the play, I think the social mores at the time just would not tolerate it. It was you know, ribald, and, you know, it was a raunchy little romp. And, of course, there's the idea that one of the servants is making a whole bunch of money off of all the dumb aristocracy and, you know, all kinds of things like that. But it's also the play that gave birth to the word malapropism. There's a character called Mrs. Malaprop, who is one of the funniest characters ever written, just, you know, constantly mispronouncing and misinterpreting words. And
probably, in real terms, the most influential character to ever come out of that period.
I would think, yeah. Certainly the idea that the English language now has the word malaprop because of this character.
It's a wild piece of staging. But you seem to, and the company too, seems to be driven towards finding plays that make us take another look at institutions. Mm-hmm. You know, that in the most entertaining way possible, judge institutional behavior.
Yes, and how to do that in a forum with an audience that is entertainment based. I think from the very start, we were always trying to figure out how to combine social import with popular culture. I think the Warner Brothers cartoons influenced us as much as Brecht did. So there was the combination of the two. Like, you know, yes, we want to talk about important things, but we also want people to laugh their butts off. And so, you know, it was the kind of, well, the material we look for is, it depends on the time we're in, of course, and what's happening. But also that we know that there's a compact that happens between an audience and performers. And when people have the faith in us to come through our doors and pay money to see us, we feel we owe them a really great evening of theater. We have never gone into the idea of that I've seen in some theater of this feeling like the performers, the writer, the director are all smarter than me, you know, that I'm being condescended to, or maybe I should know more in order to be in this space with these people because I don't feel like I know what's going on. That intellectual kind of approach has never been something that we're comfortable with. We always have gone for material that was meaningful but that we could bring our style of theater to.
But it's also, in every production I've seen, has been incredibly energetic. I mean, you really want to, like, rouse people in the theater. That's been one of the constant approaches to the things that you do there, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I mean, we do a 1984 that we've been touring all over the world.
Is it almost 10 years now that it's been up? Like, since
2000? Yeah, I think we did it in the first in 2006.
Six? Yeah,
so
right.
It's about 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really interesting run because the first time we did it, it was during the Bush years, and it definitely had a direct connection to Guantanamo and
the Patriot
Abu Ghraib
Act.
And the Patriot Act and all of those things. But as time has progressed, because that was a very hardcore production and not many funny things in it, and as time has gone on, we've found more and more of the satire in Orwell's writing and more the humor in it. And it's interesting because it's not on the surface right there, but there is some really interesting ironies that are running through that piece and really interesting comments on society that go way beyond the torture of Winston Smith that have to do with the way we look at ourselves, the way we self-police ourselves. The idea that what Orwell writes in the book about war being taking on a whole new meaning post-nuclear bomb, that it can no longer be about conquest or annihilation. It is simply about depleting one's own resources to keep the middle class down.
It's the treatment. We're talking politics and theater with Tim Robbins. We're really talking about the Actors Gang, which has a terrific production of The Rivals that's up here in L.A. until November 17th. You can also see the show at kcrw.com. But what I find kind of interesting about the things I've seen at Actors Gang is that there are often lots of people on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that for me almost goes back to seeing, you know, Cradle of Rock, the film you did about this, a lot of the same things we're talking about, which was full of people. What is it about, like, big casts and ensembles that really attract you?
Well, you can do so much more. I mean, the material that, for example, you know, we are always battling with the economic model. The economic model in theater is, can you do a play with two people in it? Because then we can make some money.
Yeah, why aren't you doing the gin game, for God's sake?
Gin game, sleuth. You know, let's just do sleuth for the rest of our life. You know, Waiting for Godot, four actors. Great idea, you know. But, you know, a wonderful play. But we've always been attracted to more epic theater. You know, the idea of how theater began with the Greeks and as a connection between audience and performer in the service of a deeper truth.
But I feel like it must have been something for you in the way you first saw theater. Did you see theater with lots of people on stage?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, well, the one of the things that really blew my mind was seeing André Serbon's production of Agamemnon in the park. And I think he also did a Pericles that was amazing. It was free theater in the park, Shakespeare in the Park.
So, yes, the Central Park.
And a great program that turned a lot of people on to theater. And I then came to understand that, you know, when I started doing theater myself, that to tell big stories, you need big casts. The stories that are told with large casts, I just was always more attracted to. And plus, it gives more opportunity to actors.
It's the treatment. We're talking about lots of people on stage with Tim Robbins. We're talking about the Actors Gang. The newest production is a production of The Rivals. The show is up until November 17th. This is the treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. But I think feel like part of that is that it's a way to energize an audience for you. I mean, just having that many people on stage in that space, it really sort of that energy spills into the crowd. You can't help but be moved by it.
Yes, as long as we don't outnumber the crowd. In our earlier years, we have had a couple nights like that where, you know, there's 20 people in the cast and 15 people in the audience. But we get great audiences in now to Culver City.
And how long have you been in Culver City?
We've been there for 7 years now.
Because I know you from the other location.
Yeah, before that we were in Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard. We love it in Culver City. We have a beautiful park outside, and it really lends itself to the education programs we do. We have kids coming to the theater almost every day for after-school programs that we provide free of charge to public school system in Culver City. And the park, we also do summer shows. We do a kind of adapted, shortened versions of Shakespeare plays for children. This last year, we did The Tempest, the Star Wars edition. Prospero being, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and which is a lot of fun for kids.
He could be Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader.
Yes, he could be, actually. We didn't do that, but Darth Vader was in the show.
Which character?
Well, it was an invented character. But the good news is that we introduced children to the idea of Shakespeare, not thinking that they're going to be able to deal with 2.5 hours of Shakespeare, but just the language. We keep the language within the context of our interpretation, so they're hearing Shakespeare's words coming out of our wild interpretations of them.
And how many of those productions for children do you do a year? Do you try to do at least a certain number every year?
We do the summer, Saturdays and Sundays, free shows in the park at 11 a.m.
Okay.
And that's the summer program.
And you also do an outreach to prisoners as well, don't you?
Yes, we go for eight-week sessions. We go Tuesdays to Norco Prison. This year, this session, we're doing two sessions. We're doing one in the upper prison, one in the lower prison. We would drive out there with 8 to 10 actors, and we go and split up and do theater workshops with incarcerated men in the efforts to rehabilitate. It's a really interesting program. I was there yesterday. It's I believe, very effective in that it tries to repattern individuals in how they respond emotionally to hostile situations. And we do it through improv, and we do it through characters. We don't get into any kind of, like, psychology of who you are and what your complaints are, but we take the commedia characters into prison, and we say you're playing an Arlecchino or a Pantalone. You choose. It's your choice. But you have to, in the improvisation of this, be able to be adaptable to switch to any of four different emotions. And an example of that is that someone enters in an angry state, and another man enters in an angry state. And our first rule with all the work we do, whether it's in prison or with the kids or with our own company, is that no actor should ever use another actor. In other words, you can't touch or hit because you feel like doing it. You can not invade someone's personal space. It keeps things safe on the stage, and it keeps people in a situation where they can go to extremes of emotion and feel safe. And so if a man enters angry and another man enters angry, there's really no scene there. Whereas if there's a response to the anger, whether it's fear or sadness or happiness, it provides different paths of choices to the individual once they leave the prison. And what happens is they come back with these descriptions of things that happen, like a guy in the yard getting in another guy's face. And he said, usually in the past, I would have fought him. But since I've been taking this class, I realized that guy was like a Pantalone, and I started laughing at him. It was such an interesting reaction that no fight happened. The guy walks away from him and gives him a thumbs up later in the yard for avoiding the altercation. Or a guy saying that for the first time, he understood why a particular guard was being hostile towards them. And instead of reacting with anger at that, actually had sadness for this guy, saying, I wonder what his life is that he has to be so mean to us all the time. That's really advanced. That's like empathy coming out of this work that we do.
So what you're saying is by offering these guys insight into archetype, you're helping them you're giving them social tools.
Yes. Social tools and emotional tools. How to avoid altercation, how to respond with empathy, how to, if someone's hostile and angry and coming at you, that fear is a legitimate emotion. Fear is an emotion that's very, very hard for people to show to each other in prison. It means you're weak. And so if you introduce it as a natural emotion and something that is, you know, even if you're feeling it and even if you're hiding it, at least to acknowledge that you're hiding it, is something that will eventually illuminate a discovery in a person.
So what you're basically doing is using what commedia does, basically having an understanding of truth as a way to deport yourself.
Yes. And humor.
And humor. Okay. Well, on that amusing note, we'll take a break. My guest who's changing Shakespeare and probably having some copyright trouble with George Lucas is Tim Robbins. We're talking about the Actors Gang. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Do you like KCRW on Facebook? If not, you're missing out on the latest music updates, program exclusives, and in-studio video clips. Join the conversation at facebook.com/KCRW.
Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my guest, Tim Robbins, sitting across from me. Of course, you know him from his many roles in films, again, such as his Oscar-winning turn working with Clint Eastwood in Mystic River. But as a director in terrific films such as Dead Man Walking and Bob Roberts and a real favorite of mine, Cradle Will Rock. He's always been somebody, often been someone who lets us know where he stands both emotionally and in entertainment terms. We're talking about the repertory company here in L.A., the Actors Gang. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But I'm just completely fascinated by this thing we were talking about before the break about offering convicted men these tools. Where did that come from?
One of our company members, Sabra Williams, came to me about 6.5 years ago and said she'd been doing this program in England, where she was from, and wondered if she could bring it to the Actors Gang. And I gave her some seed money, and she started it. And 6 years later, we're still doing it, and we've expanded.
And how do you get approvals from the prisons that you go to? How does that work out?
Well, the prison we're in right now, Norco, is a place we've been for the last 4.5 years. Now, two years ago, January, the state of California cut all funding for any kind of arts rehabilitation programs in the prison system. All funding was eliminated. And we were, at the time, in a session at Norco, and in the middle of a session. And we went to the warden, Sabra and I, and we said, listen, we don't need state money. We never have taken state money for this. All we need is your cooperation and you to get us in and out. And they love the program because they see how it has affected change in the people that we work with. And so they have been very helpful in us continuing this program. To give you an idea of the kind of change that has happened at this prison, one of the when we started that program 4 years ago, you know, we got 15, 16 guys to do it, and it was kind of like they were made fun of. You know, they put makeup on, they did this thing. And within 4 years, the culture of that part of the prison has completely changed to the point where last June, when we did our final presentation of our 8-week program, 200 of 600 inmates signed up for the next program. That's a sea change in the culture of the prison. It's now considered a productive and cool thing to do in the prison. So I know it can. I know it can affect change.
How did you get involved with the troop in the first place? Talk to me about that.
We were college students at UCLA. I did this outrageous little production I directed of Ubu the King, the Alfred Jarry piece.
How did you stage it?
Very scatologically. Let's put it that way. We were, you know, the actors I had cast and myself, we were all kind of punk rockers at the time, and we wanted to do theater that was vital and exciting, like a punk rock concert. And we got a theater in Hollywood to let us have the space at midnights on Fridays and Saturday nights. And the great thing about Los Angeles at the time was that when we did it, we were reviewed by the LA Weekly, the LA Times, the LA Reader, the LA Examiner. They all came. It was my first production out of college, and it was really, really supported by those guys, you know. But it was such a exciting time for us because I was getting, you know, I was starting to go out on auditions, but I basically funded Ubu the King out of my pizza delivery money from Jacopo's in Beverly Hills. You know, I was like, I was making $100 a night, so that was enough for me to fund my first production. And so I deliver pizzas Monday to Thursday and do the show Friday and Saturday, and, you know, I had another job as well. But from that point, we started doing other material. And within 3 years of our existence as an organization, we came upon a man named George Bigot, who was here with the Olympic Arts Festival. And he came with a Théâtre du Soleil from Paris.
That's 84.
Yeah, 84. Aaron Mnuchin's company. And it's a, you know, they did this amazing production of some Shakespeare's. So he stayed behind to do a workshop in the Commedia dell'Arte. And three of us from the Actors Gang went and took this course with him. It was a 7-week, 8-week course. And it really fundamentally changed us because it gave us an order and a discipline to our anarchy. We had all the energy, we had all the commitment we needed to make great theater, but we didn't have the discipline, we didn't have the form, and he gave us that. And from that point on, we became more and more responsible in the way we approached our theater. Instead of coming at it from a completely punk rock anarchistic way, we came at it from a much more disciplined and professional way.
But that punk rock aspect you're talking about is clearly motivated you, like looking at institutional institutions in these productions and finding a way to subvert people's attitudes about them.
Or just to eliminate truth. I mean, I don't really, I'm not into subversion.
Really?
No, I'm not. Listen, you know, it's funny because you sometimes what happens when you deal with material, whether it's film or theater, that is about a current situation we're in or is talking to a certain truth that exists that is not perhaps a wider truth because the major media isn't perhaps telling that story. To tell that story, I don't view it as subversive. I view it as illuminating. I don't think that it's subversive to tell the truth. I think it's, you know, or if it is, then we all have to reevaluate whether we're living in a free society or not. I feel like we are in a free society. There certainly have been intimidating times when I've spoken out against, for example, the last war in Iraq. And the most radical thing I ever said was maybe we should wait until we find the weapons of mass destruction before we bomb the place. And that was treated in the media as a radical, subversive thing to say. But in fact, it's not. And so in other words, I don't buy the language of the people that are trying to marginalize you, that are trying to make you into something you're not. I'm simply asking questions. And as a theater company, we're asking questions. We're asking our audiences to come and be entertained and to perhaps ask questions at the end, perhaps to engage in a dialogue in the lobby, perhaps to engage in a dialogue with us after the show, but never to shove anything down their throat. I don't like it when I'm in an audience that people are doing that. I don't like overtly political pieces that have no sense of humor about themselves. You lose the battle that way. Because essentially, that old canard that they say, you're preaching to the choir. Well, sometimes that's true if you're not trying to entertain as well, you know. And by the way, sometimes the choir needs to be talked to because they're singing out of tune. But I reject the notion that you shouldn't do pieces that have content because everyone's going to agree with you anyway. I don't believe that.
My guest, who's turned radically philosophical in the last few moments, is Tim Robbins. We're talking theater, of course, about the Actors Gang. The newest production there is a production of The Rivals. Is up till November 17th. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I just think it was kind of a radical choice to choose that piece of material. And you were talking about the way that kind of happened. It was a really risky thing to do because I've never seen the stage before. I've only read it when I was in college. It's an incredibly long play with a lot of stuff going on. But even at the time, it was basically breaking with convention. And I do feel like, especially seeing this production of it, how incredibly modern it was.
Yes. And David Schweitzer is a really wonderful director. We've worked with, in the past, he's done four productions with us throughout our history. And they've always been productions that have reinvented classics, Salome. And he did an amazing Salome. He did a part of our Oresteia that we did. And what he brings is a real sense of fun to his staging and a sense of brightness and life and spirit. And thankfully, because it was a long play, he also brings a scissor to he has made some very judicious cuts in a way that makes it a palatable evening in the theater. It's a 2 hour, 15 minutes, you know, that you're in the theater.
I have to say, I was a little nervous about going just because having read it, I had no idea how long the production was going to be. And it really moves like a shot. I mean, they must be exhausted after they're done with it.
Oh, yeah. But they're in good shape, those guys. we do a weekly workshop Sunday that they are exhausting, but they keep them focused and in good shape. David is a really lively director and a really exciting director, and I knew that would be the case. I am not a fan of keeping every word from classics intact, because oftentimes there are references that only modern audiences of the time could understand. And to leave those in there and put notes in the program about what they mean kind of, I think, affects the real import of what the playwright was trying to say.
And the real impact as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. And so once you get into those 3 and 4 hour productions that have not cut one word, it's very, very difficult to pull them off. And like it or not, we are in a culture that demands a two-hour production. You know, people don't want to see, well, I do, but most people don't want to go to the theater and spend 4 hours there.
In fact, people are now sort of trained that when there's an intermission, they get nervous because there's so many shows that don't have intermission anymore.
Yeah, and we have it now in the program. This play is this amount of time. just so you know, you're not going to be in here forever. It's the P.T. Barnum in us. he's such a fun director, and it's such a fun production, and there's such great writing in the play too. I mean, we were talking earlier about this Falkland character, who's 200 years.
Now tell him what he does in the play.
He is a guy that's in love with he's one of the, not the main character, but he's like one of the supporting characters, and he's in love with this girl named Julia. Even though she is pure love and pure generosity toward him, he has so many neuroses that he cannot hear that. And so he's always questioning and analyzing and hyper-analyzing and not trusting. And he's like Woody Allen.
And looking for approval from other people.
Yeah, it's like the classic archetype character created in the 18th century. It's like, it's before Freud. You've got a character that is completely undoing himself psychologically when the reality in front of him is so pure and so genuine, and he's just hyper-analyzing it to the point where they've split up. And then you have a character like Malaprop, or you have the character like Sir Anthony Absolute and Captain Jack Absolute, and all these really funny characters that are essentially what the play is it's like kind of like the rich people go to Bath for a vacation and try to arrange marriage for money.
We should say Bath, England, so people think you're going to get to bathe themselves.
Oh, right. Essentially, they go with ulterior motives to try to marry rich. There's duels, that whole idea that if you have a disagreement with someone over a woman, that someone should die. You know, that kind of mentality. And then the idea that, you know, it's really, when you look at it, it's kind of like it saw the coming dawn of reality television. It's the real house wenches of Bath.
Now, is that something that's part of the fun of this for you, is finding a way to couch this in sort of modern pop culture terms so audiences come out to the shows?
Yes, and mainly that at this time, when we have so much on our plates and so much negativity coming through to us via the media, now's not the time, I believe, for satire, or now's the time for something that can make us laugh. And I think that's desperately needed in these times.
Well, I'm glad you did it. And these things always go by too fast. And it's been too long since you've been here. Please come back soon.
I will. Thanks, Alice.
Oh, my pleasure. My guest is Tim Robbins. We're talking about The Actors Gang, and more specifically, the production of The Rivals, which is up at The Actors Gang until November 17th. Our recording engineer, KCRW in Santa Monica, is J.C. Swaddock, who also mixes the show. It is edited and produced by Jenny Radulet. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.